Welcome, everyone, to the C-Suite Podcast. I'm Steve McDonald, your host. And today, we've got a really interesting conversation. We're going to talk about the traditional win-loss sales analysis and what's being left on the table. We all have our own version of that. This isn't an area that is new to us. What is new to us is, what are we missing out on? What are the learning opportunities to really affect revenue, to affect the actual sales method that we have, to align with the expectations of our buyers, to learn in ways we haven't learned before? And so to do that, we're going to bring in the experts. Stu Perlmutter is the founder of First Resource, and you've been doing win-loss analysis for a long time. And we have on also Janet Flesch and Kelly Eisner. We're going to go through the ins and outs of what is a new definition that we need to be thinking about in a win-loss analysis, and how do we benefit from that? But maybe if you wouldn't mind each just taking 30 seconds or so and giving us a little bit of insights into your background and your expertise in this area.
Thanks, Steve. I'm Stu Perlmutter. When I founded First Resource, we had a keen interest in competitive intelligence. And what that morphed into was an investigation of really what's the best way to find out how a company should be competing. And what we realized was, especially customers who recently made a buying decision are the best source of human intelligence about how companies should be competing. And so we evolved the win-loss practice actually about 25 years ago that we've been continuously honing and improving. And we've proven both in enterprise and in mid-market that our method works really well for CMOs and the leadership teams of companies. And Janet, you might want to introduce yourself.
I'm Janet Flesch. I'm the practice lead for customer insights for First Resource. I've been with the company for about 8 years. My background is in product management, in customer acquisition and retention, and new product development. I worked for major enterprise companies like General Mills and Comcast, but I've also worked for small to mid-market companies as well, both B2B and B2C.
Fantastic. Kelly, how about you?
Yeah, I'm Kelly Eisner. I conduct and analyze win-loss interviews with First Resource. So I'm having those conversations with clients, customers, and prospects. I have a 20-year background in market research, former VP of market research for NBC Universal, and now working across varied industries to deliver insights.
Fantastic. One thing I wanted to do just before we get in, we talked about what your definition of a win-loss analysis is. But in terms of context, I just wanted to say was, as CMOs, as C-suite, we are all well-trained on we have to be very revenue-focused, very deep into the pipeline. And that usually means we're very attribute-focused in terms of what are the marketing attributes that are contributing to a sale, how are we putting our tech stack together so that we're collecting and getting the right data. But what you're really talking about here is complementing that in a big way and doing that from in-depth one-on-one interviews. And one of the things I just wanted to say up front that I love so much about this is that the sales team can have a lot of conversations in an ABM process. They have a lot of conversations with a lot of people in their prospects and then hopefully their clients. But those are within a sales environment. I like to say it's with a shield that comes up where the buyer is trying to protect themselves as much as learn. And what you do is not a sales call. It's very different dynamic. And then the learning opportunities are very different as a result. So what I just wanted to do is maybe I'll ask you this question here, is what your definition of a win-loss analysis is and how it's different than what companies are already doing today.
Of course. So I guess the one word answer is complexity. B2B companies, especially those with software and services offerings, are selling into a very complex environment, usually in mid-market to enterprise where you have multiple decision influencers and it's usually hard to even identify who within that organization is weighing in on the decision. There's a lot of complexity with product market fit, and amplifying that is the multiple use cases and segments they might be selling into. Once an opportunity falls down to the sales part of the funnel, there's a really difficult environment. With all that fragmentation, it's really hard to analyze that with conventional data analytics methods. Companies that do win-loss typically are doing that by scraping data from their CRM. They're requiring sales teams to make all the requisite entries. And there's usually someone in sales ops that's preparing reports that talk about what analytic formula leads to wins and which leads to losses. And usually that's left lacking. What's really needed and how we've constructed our approach and methodology is there's a deep need for a qualitative approach to get a deeper and more contextual view of the buyer journey and the decision process. And that would reflect on the marketing, sales process, and also product development.
What I love about that qualitative approach is that we need to be representing the buyer. Somebody needs to be representing them. Amazon used to have their executive meetings in open chair that literally represented the customer. And so what I love that is when I'm taking away from what you're saying in this qualitative approach is that you're representing the insights that don't typically come from the data analytics or the sales meetings along the ABM process. But Janet, maybe if you could explain a little bit more about this qualitative approach, this win-loss analysis.
Yeah, we embraced win-loss analysis early on because we found it to be the most effective approach to mine customer insights from recent deal flows. Done in a systematic way, it really offers a deep dive into actual buying decision because we retrace the customer journey through. So done in a systematic way, it offers a deep dive into actual buying decisions. We retrace the customer journey from the prospect's perspective, and we really identify the critical drivers of those wins and losses. In our approach, we conduct in-depth one-on-one telephone interviews with the key decision maker conducted by an experienced interview. And we're able to really carefully mine those customer storytelling opportunities so that we understand really what that whole process looks like from the buying customer's perspective. And that yields insights for marketing, for sales, for product development, and helps them to drive net new sales and deepen relationships with existing clients so that they're able to renew existing contracts.
If I could add something to amplify what Janet just said, in a lot of company contexts, when win-loss analysis is done, the subtext of that is often, how did sales screw up? If there's a loss of a large opportunity that was on everyone's radar, usually the orientation of that inquiry is, how did sales screw up? And that's not our orientation. As Janet alluded to, we look broadly across the entire sales marketing spectrum, learn how every element of the team improved their enablement, their performance, their teamwork.
And you know what I love about, like you made the point that it's not just about who screwed up, because we want to emulate the things that we're doing right. But storytelling is so important. We actually retain information at an 80% greater rate when it comes to us in a story. The story that's happening inside the organization, the story that the salesperson doesn't see, and how they're making decisions and what was important to them, that is good information, but then told in a story, it can be retained and acted upon. Because bottom line is, if the result isn't a better sales process, better methodology, better way that marketing can contribute to win more, then it's all lost. The storytelling, I think, is one of the biggest things that you just said there. But to that end, Kelly, maybe you could tell us a few stories, some examples about how do the insights that come out of this in your method, how does that really play out?
Yeah, that's a great point you make about the storytelling, but just a few quick examples of some things that we've learned for clients through win-loss analysis. For instance, we've learned in some cases that the client is actually underpricing their service in the marketplace. And the reason this is maybe leading to lost sales is it's leading prospects to question, hey, maybe this provider doesn't understand the full scope of my needs or the full scope of the project, or maybe they haven't worked on a project of this size before. It's raising those questions because that client was underpricing their service versus the competition in the marketplace. That can be a valuable learning. We've helped clients to realize where maybe they can streamline their sales process. Maybe they had an extra step in their sales process versus some competitors that was slowing it down for prospects. It wasn't prospects had an expectation for how long it should take to get through the sales process and to an engagement. And maybe that wasn't being met. So you can look for ways to streamline that sales process. Maybe there's a point that is not necessarily needed or something like that. You've helped clients to hear what the competition is providing in the marketplace, gives them a chance to really hear from prospects and customers what their needs are, maybe what needs aren't being met. And so that can help inform new product development. Various different ways throughout the marketing, sales, and product development cycle that you can have learnings through win-loss analysis.
One of the most amazing things that we don't get by our typical win-loss analysis that we do is we don't get any competitive insights. All we know is our relationship we have with that client. We have no idea of the relationship with all the other companies that they're looking at. And if we don't have that information and we don't have access to it, then we're missing a big chunk of the insights and the story that we need to know in order to win more. That might be still part of the answer, but there's a lot of us that are on right now listening saying, we've been doing win-loss analysis for years. I'm maybe 28 years into my career and I've been doing win-loss analysis and talking with sales. We've been making conclusions and moving on. What's different here? Why do we need to be paying attention to what you're talking about today?
I think you hit on a key part of it, Steve, which is the true value comes in the storytelling. And the best kept secret about all this is that the prospect, whether it's a new customer because it's a win, or what we call the failed prospect in the event they went with a competitor, they want to tell that story. They just want to tell it in a safe space. The mistake that we see companies making, other than what we described earlier, which is they try to do it just through data analytic methods, maybe the worst mistake, and we see it commonly, is where a sales rep who is driving the deal or some other company representative calls the failed prospect, the one who just selected the competitor. And that's always, a really uncomfortable conversation. People are squirming in their chairs. And the dynamic there is that the customer, prospect, is really just trying have that salesperson feel better and get them off the phone, because it just feels too much like a confrontation. The reason that we evolved our method, and the reason why it works, is that we give that safe space. We tee it up so that we're an independent third party. And when Kelly gets on the call, she's not challenging them in any way. She's very empathetic. She's got her rapport with them. And as a result, these buyers, who are usually busy executives and don't easily give away half an hour block of their time, are very engaged. Kelly, you might want to comment how engaged they are and how many stay even beyond the scheduled time.
Yeah, that often ends up being the case. As Stu mentioned, we like to start off the call assuring them that we're a neutral third party, don't work with the company that we're talking about. And I think that from the beginning helps set things more at ease with the person you're speaking with. In general, we try to frame it as a conversation more than, here's a question, what's your answer? Here's a question, what's your answer? And within the context of a conversation, people relax. Sometimes they can start almost using it as a chance to, oh, here are all my frustrations. And different information sometimes comes out in those conversations than maybe you were expecting, which you can follow up on and generate even additional learnings. But yeah, we often find that we'll have that slated 30-minute timeframe to talk with an executive, and it will go beyond that just because the executive is enjoying themselves. They have more to say. And I often find at the end of the conversation, people are saying, if you need anything else, don't hesitate to reach back out or things like that.
Steve, you mentioned earlier about gathering competitive information. That's something else that through this method we're able to do, because through that trust and rapport that Kelly just described, people talk about how the competitors showed up. in every aspect. So they're opening the kimono and telling us things that they wouldn't tell the company that hired us. Another thing that Kelly touched on earlier in her examples was, if you recall, there was a case of a client that was underpricing their services. So the subtext there is that was a win. That's the only way you could get that information. When you talk to new customers, those are wins, you can find out all kinds of things that you can't find out in the loss scenarios, because now there's a relationship. Our client is now serving them, and they're going to tell us a lot more. The value of wins is great. Sometimes companies, and it's a typical dynamic when you have a field sales force, to close a deal, a sales rep will go to his or her manager to get a price concession to close a deal so they could close the deal by the end of the quarter. And then we'll circle back with the win interview and find out that the price concession wasn't necessary. They would have done the deal. They would have signed the contract at the regular pricing. That's pretty compelling if you're the CFO to learn about those things.
Absolutely. And I love that, to underscore the dynamic and how it's different in your conversations. And Kelly, I have a suggestion for your LinkedIn profile in addition to your title, and it's called the Executive Therapist.
Yes, sometimes it feels that way.
I think that it's a good understanding of why this conversation is different. It's like going to a cocktail party and you talk to somebody and they talk the whole time, but they had the best time because they're able to get things off their chest. They're able to talk about things that they don't really have a forum to talk about and help them try to fix it. And so I just think I'd like to underscore that's a really important dynamic in what you do to get the kind of information that you do get. But this seems maybe, Stu, a little bit silly to ask, because a lot of us do surveys and we'll ask very pointed questions and we rely on those surveys and to make decisions. But I think we've already talked about why this is a lot different than surveys, but I think you have a couple of extra points that you wanted to add in on that.
Yeah, that's important, Steve, because what we see across companies is that many of them do this kind of win-loss analysis through surveys. They don't just feel their CRM data. They're sending out surveys to every prospect and new customer. And we find that's not effective, and here's why. First, what we're talking about is highly complex solutions, B2B, high dollar sales. More often than not, the key decision maker is a busy executive. And so there are two scenarios. They're either going to see the invitation in their inbox and decline the invitation, not take the survey, or they're going to speed through it and not provide any really great insights in the open ends. And so what have you got? I'm missing a lot of good insights there. But just piling on a little bit, what we're talking about here is in B2B, unless you're Microsoft and you have 100,000 B2B users, you're talking about a low-end convenience sin. And so even if you had a lot of responses, it wouldn't be statistically valid. You'd be drawing responses that really don't tell you anything. For all those reasons, we gravitated to this purely qualitative approach. It's not like we don't know how to do quant. We do a lot of quantitative research. We've just, as a firm, decided that our qualitative methods are the best way to do win-loss analysis.
There's a whole experiential component to that too, because if one of the most important things is speaking to the customer, the client that just got signed, you're trying to create a relationship with them. You're trying to establish a rapport with them. And the experience of sending out an impersonal survey to kick off that relationship, the opposite of what we'd really like to do, have more of the kind of conversations that Janet or Kelly, that you were talking about. But what I'd love to do is go a little bit different direction in the conversation here and just say, what are the kind of things that trigger the need for this kind of an analysis? What are the things that happen that you typically find that when your customers, your clients come to you, why are they coming? Janet, maybe you could take a crack at that.
Sure. Often, many of our clients come to us because they have recently experienced some unexpected and often painful losses that are impacting their bottom line. And frankly, there's a lot of internal concern about what is driving that. At a higher level, looking at win and renewal rates, they're declining, or other pipeline metrics that are not hitting targets. And there's a real need to clarify
where on that marketing, sales, and product spectrum improvements are needed. The real advantage of what win-loss analysis offers is this common understanding based on objective voice of customer insights. Not only does that help shed light on internal assumptions, but it also really opens up the insight for marketing and sales and product to help them become aware of and learn more about some of those blind spots that they may have not been aware of. And that really then leads to the opportunity for marketing and sales and product to move forward based on this common shared understanding that is founded on objective voice of customer insights. We had an example with a client, for instance, where we were able to provide them market-based insights to say that it was really their product capability issues that were resulting in the lower win rate versus, for example, the sales approach that some of the individuals in the C-suite perceived to be the issue. That helped them agree on and move forward with where they should really be prioritizing and refocusing their resources.
If you get that wrong, you're looking for the answer in the wrong place, which means you won't have it.
Absolutely.
I realize it's worth amplifying. Jan and Kelly might want to chime in on this. For that instance where the issue was all around product and not sales process, the nuance was as much product roadmap, that is, the visibility the company was able to provide for prospects about not just what the product performance attributes were today, but where they're headed in the future.
Let's dig a little bit deeper in there. Let's talk about what do companies learn. What are some of the insights that you can provide specifically to marketing? We've been talking at a very large, high level here that makes perfect sense. But if you could get into the weeds a little bit more in terms of what are we going to learn? How does marketing, how do they play a role in this? How do they learn from this? And what are they going to get?
Yeah, absolutely. We really look at that full customer journey across from the initial need recognition all the way through to that purchase decision. And that provides insights for those critical drivers for wins and losses, and also helps them identify really where they need to focus their resources. From a marketing perspective specifically, let's start with targeting. It really helps inform the ICP. It helps to validate if prospects are fitting that ICP target segment. We had an example with a client that had recently repositioned from a consulting to a SaaS model. And the insights that we were able to provide them with win-loss analysis not only helped them to refine their ICP in terms of customer segment, but it also helps them identify within that target company what role the decision maker was filling, because that had changed with their repositioning. They had been targeting previously more of the operations side, and what they were learning with their repositioning was that they needed to focus their target to the finance side.
Do you ever get insights that would lead to help prioritize ICPs? I talk to companies that say, we've got 8 ICPs. So the first thing you want to say to them is you got too many ICPs. But with what you learn in these conversations that you're having, do you help companies prioritize their ICPs? Is that a part of what comes out of this?
Absolutely. That's something that our insights can help, because as we're talking to the decision maker, sometimes, first of all, we find that they're not the key decision maker, that we're focusing on the wrong area. But we also uncover sort of what really was driving that prospective client's identification of their consideration set. Who were they looking at from a competitive standpoint? And by looking at that, we can start to understand our client's competitive set, who they should be looking at, what segments are most important to them. There are a lot of variables that can go into that. And so the win-loss analysis insights can really help to inform that and to validate that.
If you don't get your ICP right, then this is one of the biggest things that contributes to the misalignment between marketing and sales, because typically what we do then is that when we understand our ICP, then we're going to develop all kinds of content to help and support that ICP and their job and what they do. If we've got that wrong, then all of a sudden, we're going to miss the mark in a big way. I think over two-thirds of content that marketing creates for sales to aid in this sales and this ABM process is not viewed upon by sales as even important. And by the actual buyer, they look at it, 70% of that didn't have any value for them. The very function that we as marketers provide in the sales process, we have to get the ICP right. And so that's one of the biggest things I'm taking away here is the insights for the ICP and that whole competitive set so that we know who we're talking to and what their concerns and their needs really are.
Exactly. I would also say from a marketing perspective, some of the really key insights from win-loss analysis can help with awareness and perception, really understanding how your prospects became aware of your company and your competitors, and what is the perception of your company both prior to and throughout that whole selection process. That has implications, obviously, for where you want to allocate your resources in terms of your marketing spend. It also helps with positioning and messaging because you're starting to understand, okay, what are those solutions that you offer? What are the really salient aspects and the really differentiating aspects that are most important to prospects? And that can really help influence what your messaging is, what your campaigns look like, what your content looks like. I think, Kelly, we had a really good example of that. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I can think of a client. They provided high-level strategy services, but also tactical implementation services. But in talking with prospects, we were finding they were identifying their immediate need as more of the tactical implication, but they weren't seeing the client as a provider of that. They were seeing them as more high-level strategy to get to down the road. So maybe they were turning elsewhere for the implementation and looking to them for the strategy piece. But the client provided both. So it was just had implications for how they could talk about that in their online marketing or things like that, pull out examples or case studies of ways in which they've done the implementation services as well.
Another nuance, and this goes back to what Janet was saying a minute ago about how the prospect finds out about competitors during their journey. And as we all know, particularly with a technology sale, B2B, often that journey is months, many months from initial need identification to when there's a commitment to a contract. And also to your point, Steve, about ICP, a lot of the competitors are working with the same ICP and the prospect is seeing a lot of the competitors' content as well. During that journey, they're talking to the competitive sales teams. If a client of ours qualifies the prospect initially about their definition of an ideal solution and then doesn't stay in touch in the right way and query what others within the organization are thinking is the ideal solution, what happens is every competitor wants to reframe that ideal solution to line up with their distinctive advantages. And so by the time it gets to the finalist meeting, it's possible, and we see it more often than you think, that all of a sudden, the way the buying organization is framing the need has been morphed every way but Tuesday by all these competing sales messages that happen in that time space.
Also, from a marketing perspective, another key area that win-loss can help inform is price value. Is a company's pricing really reflecting their value from the perspective of the buyer, particularly versus their competitors? We certainly had a case that was interesting. Do you want to talk about that, Kelly? Is it related to pricing?
Yeah, sure. And I'd like to share, I know we talked about this a little bit before, the conversational nature of these interviews, but people are often more than willing to share, this is what this competitor was charging or proposing for a price versus the client we're working with. Was that 50% different from what our client proposed? In some cases, it has been things like that. That's a learning, but we can also, to your point, Janet, when you're talking about value from the eyes of the prospect or their client, sometimes we'll hear maybe they're consolidating to, instead of having multiple tools, to one tool, because for the same price, while they can't go as deep in the area of one of the products, maybe they can get more capabilities, less deep, but more capabilities across the board for the same price. And so maybe they're putting the value on that, and just learning has implications for positioning and pricing.
What I'd love to do is, I've got a hard stop in 4 minutes. But as I'm looking through some of the other questions we hadn't got to, you mentioned product development. We've already talked about that, the impact on product. What about wins? Why bother, including customers who have already said yes? I think we've actually talked to that already. Why would a busy executive take the time? We've talked about how this isn't a sales conversation. Conversations actually go longer. I think we've talked really nicely to that already. What are some of the critical success factors for an effective WLA approach and what our listeners should be looking for? I think this is the great opportunity to wrap this up and say, if there is one takeaway that you want folks to know about the win-loss analysis, what would that be?
I'll take that. Well, done properly, win-loss analysis can deliver deep and surprising insights that help to build the roadmap to winning more and the success that every marketing and sales organization is striving for. That is across the board. That touches marketing, sales, and product. And it does it in a way that there is no other valid way to do that. It's really all about results.
Tell me, just in the 30 seconds or so, what are some of the things after your clients go through a win-loss analysis and they've felt and understood the impact and then the decision-making they have and the capabilities they have to do that? What are some of the things that they say?
We've had clients say in the presentation, actually, as we were going through sort of our theme report, things like, if we just implement one of these implications that you've highlighted, this will pay for itself tenfold. We've had clients say, we had no idea that this was actually an issue, that we were coming in underpricing, but it was communicating that our value was not at the level of the competitors. What are some other ones, Kelly?
Yeah, and clients sometimes will come back. We've implemented this change to our sales approach, and now maybe we even do another round of interviews and we're no longer hearing that pain point from prospects anymore. The fix has worked. It's proven itself out in prospect experiences.
What I'm hearing is that you're removing roadblocks to making sales. If I could just put it really simply, in sometimes roadblocks that your clients don't even know that they have. What I would love to do, so I know there's going to be people that have lots of questions. Would it be appropriate if I just gave out links to your LinkedIn profiles that if people wanted to reach out and ask another question, that they could do that?
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Thank you for coming on. I'm a big fan of what you're doing. And I just really appreciate you sharing your insights here with us, because I think there's a lot of notes that have been taken during this call, and I really appreciate your help.
Thank you. We appreciate it as well.